This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. Our hour of old-time radio crime begins with Barry Craig, confidential investigator. From August 3rd, 1954, we'll hear For Love of Murder. After that, it's Richard Diamond, private detective, and the homing pigeon case. His story from October 11th, 1950.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Anti-noise ordinances are fine and dandy. Makes living a lot more serene. But how can you legislate against the really disturbing noises, folks? The noises in your head, that would be.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. The footwork a confidential cop puts in isn't always paid mileage. Some of it's for free in the public weal and welfare. Like a trip I took to the tombs one day to see an inmate named Maxie Potter. I'd gotten a begging letter from Maxie. Could sweet charity move me to hurry to his side, end quote. Having a pint or so of the milk of human kindness in me, I complied. I found Maxie sitting on the edge of his cot. His eyes lit up like 100-watt bulbs when he saw me.
Barry Craig?
That's me.
Oh, you got a heart.
And you've got a nerve.
Just for asking you to come?
For confusing me with the Legal Aid Society.
What's wrong with helping people?
Starvation. I don't get paid. No cream in my farina.
I'll tell you what. I'll owe you your expenses.
The road to hunger is paved with bad debts.
Oh, shades of Mrs. O'Houlihan.
Mrs. O'Houlihan?
My teaching continuation school. That saying you said, she used to say it.
But it made no impression on you.
No. What I went for was, it's blessed to receive.
And so you wrote to me.
And so you're here.
Now, what do you want?
For you to get me out.
I never engineer prison breaks.
Bail. Put up the bail.
How much?
$500.
Dollars?
Sure, dollars.
Well, I haven't got it.
Well, Uncle Real Estate, then. They'll take that for bail.
I've only got a cemetery plot.
Wait. You're a citizen in good standing?
Opinions divided on that.
Well, Judge Braganza, he'll let me out on what's the word I'm trying for?
Recognizance.
Yeah, on your... Well, will you?
You've sure got a cheek.
I got troubles. I share them. I'm not proud.
What's the charge against you?
Assault. Third degree. Hardly nothing.
Who'd you hit?
Randy Lomax, the talent agent. You might have heard of him?
Everybody has.
He's been promoting my girl. Feeding her baloney about how he's going to make her a big star. I lost my head. I hit him.
What with?
A brick. But that's between us. In court, I'm denying it.
Maxie had an appeal for me. He was pure Damon Runyon. I arranged his freedom on my recognizance. When that was done, I bought him a hamburger and coffee.
Hey, reach me to relish once more, huh?
You've just about demolished the jar.
There's vitamins in relish. Besides, it's on the house.
Relish?
Man, you're sure a friend.
And you're such a leech.
Sadie, my girl, Sadie Sachs, we've been keeping company for 6 years. It's a long engagement, but Sadie likes long engagements. We had plans, the two of us. Raise rabbits and grapes as soon as we got $2,000 saved.
$2,000 saved?
To buy a certain going business over in Jersey. Sadie and me, the two of us, we worked in the Blue City Distillery.
In a distillery?
Bottle washers, both of us.
Oh.
I made 60, Sadie made 40. Anyhow, everything was hunky-dory.
Until Randy Lomax came along.
Yeah, one fine day, the rat. He saw Sadie in the funhouse at Atlantic City. He followed her around to the Ferris wheel and the Wax Museum.
Couldn't let Sadie out of his sight.
She had million-dollar legs. He kept writing that down, passing notes to her. All this behind my back.
Please continue.
You try and stop me. Then Sadie wrote out a telephone number and passed it to him.
Still behind your back?
Oh, I had a couple of beers. I was blind. Anyhow, they met next day, and Lomax sold Sadie a bill of goods. Would she be a model? And did she have theatrical ambition?
To which Sadie said, yay, brother.
Well, what girl ain't conceited? That's the story, anyhow. Sadie signed up with Lomax. He gave her a new name, Paula Paloma. From a dirty blonde, he made her jet black so he could pass her off as Spanish. What a name. Ah! Paula Paloma.
Which brings us to your fight with Lomax.
He told Sadie to give me the brush. I was wrong for her future. I was a slob, and she was now imported stuff. The rest I told you. I met Lomax, I beamed him, I got locked up.
I bailed you out.
Now you go see Lomax and get him to drop the charges. Hey, now, wait a minute. Wait till I write something out. Okay. It's written. Here.
A note?
Read it. It's an IOU. I don't want you doing too much for nothing.
Talent agent Randy Lomax looked like his black Homburg had grown out of his skull. He was wearing it when I called on him. And what made that so remarkable? The guy was in his pajamas.
All right. I withdraw the assault charge against Maxie Potter on one condition.
Name it.
Maxie jumps off a high building.
You want him dead?
Dead. Or far, far away. Craig, tell you what.
What?
Maxie settles down in the Congo. Permanently. He signs a stipulation to the fact that it is permanent.
Otherwise?
I'll prosecute him to the limit.
Such seethe. Maxie, why?
He's a pest. A menace, a loudmouth, a jerk. And lunatic.
You cost him a girl he was planning to marry.
That's Maxie's hallucination. You go ask Paula Paloma her point of view on Maxie.
Alias Paula Paloma. She's Sadie Sachs.
Look, forget the name Sadie Sachs.
Oh, the public.
We spent thousands advertising the name Paula Paloma.
Paula Paloma from Madrid, Spain.
That's her origin. Her mother was a royal countess. Her father was a fabulous industrialist.
Her boyfriend was Maxie Potter of Jersey City.
You deliberately trying to aggravate me.
I came here representing Maxie.
Maxie. Yeah. Let me show you the type of character you got for a client. I had a private detective draw me a diagram of Maxie. A report, Maxie's background, where he came from, why he gets in my hair. How come one man can be so crazy? Here. Cast an eye over this line on a 2-page report.
1949. The Inwood Home. 6 months.
Yeah, the Inwood Home is a sanitarium in Ohio. Maxie's punch drunk. Craig, on my advice, dump Maxie in the North River.
Besides crowning you with a milk bottle in an impetuous moment, what other specific grievance have you against Maxie?
He insults me on the streets. Language that makes my spine crawl. He hires children to throw garbage at me when I pass. And look, in a public restaurant, in front of 100 show people. Show people? My bread and butter, mind you. Maxie pours a plate of soup on my head.
What kind of soup?
Noodle soup. Limp noodles hanging from my brow like excelsior on a Christmas tree. Have I got specific grievances?
Sounds like it.
It's not all so comical. I'm made ridiculous. But I'm also in mortal danger.
How's that?
Threats to kill me.
Threats in what form?
The cowardly form only Punchy Maxie could use. Here, these.
Cartridges. Low caliber.
Low, high, medium. They mean murder. I find them everywhere. On my office desk, on the dining table, they come in the mail. A bullet to a letter. Craig, I'm being hounded into fear and insanity.
Why do you only suspect Maxie?
I got reasons.
Well, let me hear.
All right. These cartridges. They've been identified for me as belonging to Maxie.
Identified by whom?
Paula Paloma.
Sadie Sachs.
Craig. Again, I beg you. Please forget her other name.
I checked Maxie's mental condition with Paula Paloma. Was he ever actually confined to a sanitarium?
The time we were going together, twice.
I see. You identified certain cartridges.
Lomax told you, huh?
Lomax did. Why do you say they were Maxie's?
Because I saw the identical ones in Maxie's room at least 50 times. He kept them in a candy jar on his mantelpiece.
Why would Maxie keep cartridges in a candy jar?
Ask Maxie why.
Could Maxie kill Lomax?
Anybody could kill anybody. It's a free country, haven't you heard?
Name somebody besides Maxie who has it in for Lomax.
Daisy?
Who's Daisy?
Lomax's wife. Used to be, I mean. There's a saying, there's no fury... No fury...
Like a woman scorned.
That's Daisy. A woman scorned. She'd kill Lomax in a flash.
Other enemies of the great man?
People. A man with Lomax's lust for power must make enemies of the little people.
How do you feel about Lomax?
I worship the ground. He's my good angel, my hero. He took me out of a $40 job as bottle washer.
And made you the toast of New York?
In one short year. I've got furs, a French maid, a Belgian wolfhound, and a bank account. Love that Lomax.
Why don't you tell Maxie you were never serious with him? So he'll stop having delusions and stop bothering Lomax.
Stop bothering Lomax and start bothering me. Better he should bother Lomax. Lomax can take it, I can't. Positively not.
That evening, my client Maxie made no bones about being a little on the weird side.
Sure, I'm spooky. I ever say I wasn't?
No, not in so many words.
Why, you're looking shocked, Craig.
Well, the fact is, I had you characterized as whimsical, sort of a colorful screwball.
So now you're no different.
So you, ever get really violent, Maxie?
Yeah, every so often. The other day, I bit the ear off the dog.
Why?
The mutt was annoying me, jumping on and off my lap so I couldn't read the racing form. Was I justified?
Maxie.
What?
I don't want to be a fair-weather friend, but...
Hey, you're not edging up to ask me to go back to the tombs.
Well, on the loose like this, I'm responsible for you.
So I ain't behaving?
Are you?
Yeah, I am.
How about the cartridges you keep bombarding Lomax with?
Oh, you, know about them, huh?
I know about them.
Well, quit doing it, okay? I don't need to be doing it anymore anyhow.
What does that mean?
Well, I did it to scare Lomax, but Lomax won't scare anymore. Not the...
Lomax wasn't only a 10%er.
No, he wasn't. That much became clear tonight. He signed talent to 10-year contracts with renewal options on lopsided terms. Lopsided in favor of Lomax.
Mm-hmm. One Lomax property, the actor Baxter Burroughs, now with Clinton Pictures, made more than $250,000 in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I read those figures.
Had Lomax lived, he was certain to make an equivalent or greater sum through Paula Paloma.
Sadie Sachs. Let's see that letter again, huh?
Yeah, here you are.
From the Mecca Elwin Bayer Motion Picture Company.
A firm offer of a 7-year contract to Paula Paloma.
At $4,000 a week, scaling upwards every year.
I'd say that's the best contract offer Lomax ever received for any talent he represented.
$4,000 a week with Lomax in for half.
Half plus certain expenses. Lomax was a genius at adding expenses. The 50% generally became closer to 70.
Bad time to die. With money coming at him from all sides. Thanks, Shipley. It's been enlightening.
Wait, Mr. Craig.
What?
The money I borrowed from Lomax, I've been repaying it so much a week for years now.
How much still outstanding?
Oh, relatively small. Some really negligible.
Then I guess you've got nothing to worry about, Shipley.
Thank you, Mr. Craig.
Daisy, Maxie, Shipley, Paula. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, who done it? Maxie tried to simplify the guesswork for me. He tossed a bombshell at me through Paula.
Read this.
Love letter from an admirer?
From Maxie in the tombs, a human document. Mr. Craig, it's the cry of a tortured soul.
Dear Sadie. Well, very interesting stuff.
So what do you think?
Maxie himself write this?
It's Maxie's handwriting. Well, say something.
It's a little incredible. In the letter, Maxie apologizes to you for murdering Lomax.
It cost me a dear friend and advisor. Now Maxie's sorry.
If true, this amounts to a confession.
It's true. Why shouldn't it be true? It's Maxie's own statement, his own words. Nobody forced him.
Maxie being Maxie, you can't blame me for taking him with a box of salt, huh? Wrap the body beautiful in a mink doll. We're paying a formal visit to Maxie. We found Maxie dining on caviar and chopped onions.
All the eating's good in here.
Caviar on the prison menu?
A Ladies' Benevolent Society come through to give me this caviar and a cigar. Oh, hey, I forgot. Hiya, Sadie.
The name's Paula.
This letter you sent Paula. Still stand by what it says, Maxie?
Yeah, sure. So I murdered Lomax. What can they do to me?
Fry you.
Like fish. Am I responsible for what I do?
Aren't you?
I got a record that says I ain't.
So you figure to beat the rap by pleading insanity?
Insanity for the time being. Only while I shot Lomax. All of a sudden, I blanked out. When I come to, it was Lomax, dead on the floor, and a smoking gun in my hand.
Where's the gun?
But forget, I threw it away someplace.
Nice try, Maxie. It proves something.
Proves what?
That knighthood is still in flower, for a price.
A price?
Whatever Paula here promised you for taking the heat off her.
Paula promised?
Hey, what kind of booby talk? Mr. Craig, I must say I resent the insinuation.
Not insinuation, doll. Accusation.
You're accusing me?
Of getting Maxie to take the chance of a temporary insanity plea for a murder you did.
Craig, you're more gone than me. Why would Sadie here... Excuse me, Paula. Why would Paula here want to knock off Lomax, the best friend she had?
For money. To recover 100% of herself. Paula.
What?
Your million-dollar future with the movies. How much of a piece did Lomax have? I mean, while he was alive.
What, the usual 10%.
Lomax wasn't a 10%er.
I mean, half.
Half plus. Expenses off the top. For the build-up he gave you. Quite a bill there. Lomax knew how to run up astronomical figures. The way I calculated it in Lomax's office a few hours ago, you'd be working years for Lomax. All for Lomax, very little for you. You'd have a showcase, Lomax would keep all the marbles. How did a sensitive young lady of your refinement bring herself to shoot a man down in cold blood?
All of a sudden, Sadie blanked out. When she come to, there was Lomax, dead.
It was a pleasure shooting Lomax, a regular picnic. Lomax had it all fixed for me to be his slave. Well, I'm nobody's slave.
You'll tell your story, Sadie. How you killed a rat and a conniver who came between us. The judge will bawl like a kid. The jury won't even go out. Not guilty, Sadie. That's the verdict for sure.
Suppose you two stay here and make plans. I've got to see a man about a murder.
Mr. Craig, you're not leaving me here.
Oh, an affectionate couple like you and Maxie, made for each other. A housekeeping cell for two. Kids, I don't know a cheaper way for a loving couple to get started in life. So long now. Hey, God, open up!
You have been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, For Love of Murder, was written by John Robert. Next week, it's the strange story of Death's Bargain Basement, about which Barry Craig has this to say.
We call next week's story Death's Bargain Basement. It takes place in a department store because, as you all know, bargain basements are always found in department stores. But so, on occasion, is death. Good night, folks. See you next week.
A National Broadcasting Company has just brought you an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan, starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator, directed by Arthur Jacobson. Also heard were Barney Phillips, Tom McKee, Barbara Fuller, Gloria Ann Simpson, and Herb Ellis. Eddie King speaking. There's another exciting Dragnet adventure tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
Listen while the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
Good evening. This is your Rexall family druggist with especially important news for you. This week's issues of the Saturday Evening Post, Life, Look, Collier's, and the Farm Journal carry a 2-page advertisement on Rexall's famous 1-cent sale that starts October 19th. You'll find 150 guaranteed Rexall products, every one of them offered at 2 for the price of 1 plus a penny. And that's not all. There are 53 other specials too good to miss. So be sure to check this ad on Rexall's Big 1-cent Sale, and when you see it, remember, you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall. Now your Rexall family druggist brings you another half hour with Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell.
That's right.
How do you do? I'm Roger Renard, real estate.
Well, have a seat.
Thank you. Let's get right to the point.
So it's me, $100 a day plus expenses.
Oh, yes, your fee.
Well, it's not much, but it's all mine, and I love it. What's that racket?
Nothing. Excuse me. Mr. Diamond, I'm being blackmailed.
Well, happens in the best of families, especially in the best of families.
Mr. Diamond, I'm engaged to marry a very wealthy widower.
What's that clicking? Have you got a wild lifesaver in your mouth?
I have false teeth, Mr. Diamond. Is that so amusing?
When they start making bird calls?
Yes. They're new. Just got them yesterday. Mm. Awful nuisance.
Oh, well, you were engaged to some wealthy widow last I heard.
I don't appreciate your humor, Mr. Diamond. I happen to be very much in love with my fiancée.
Sorry?
It so happens that I dabbled in a rather, shall we say, off-color business in my younger days.
Shall we say what you mean?
Perhaps it would be better, yes. 25 years ago, Mr. Diamond, I became rather discouraged working for a living, especially when I saw less gifted men enjoying the real fruits of life, having some education and a bit of charm. Excuse me again.
You know, if you learned the Morse code on those things, it'd be the life of the party.
Briefly, I courted wealthy women, predominantly widows who sought romance, flattery, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I married several times without bothering to obtain divorces in between.
Oh, well, wait until the Reno Chamber of Commerce hears about you.
In due time, the police caught up with me. My accumulated crimes cost me 8 years in jail. But when I was released, I decided to turn my talents toward more legal pursuits.
Glory be, you're saved.
Saved, indeed. Can you imagine what my fiancée would think if she learned of my past? She'd surely suspect my motives. And the irony is that I do love her deeply.
Oh, I see. Well, who's the killjoy that shares your little secret?
Now, that's the puzzle. Nobody in New York knows of my past. I haven't told a soul. But I received this letter in the morning mail.
Here. See how smart you are.
He gave me a square white envelope, the dozen for a quarter variety, and I slipped the letter out of it. It was typewritten and point by point, looked like a pocket biography of a one-time Casanova. It ended up by ordering Renard to have a $100 bill ready that night when someone called Andy would be at his home to pick it up. I relaxed a little. The case began to look like the standard kind of blackmail as found in the detective's manual.
I know you think $100 isn't much.
Well, that all depends how often you have to pay it. I don't suppose you know who Andy is.
I do not.
Oh, well, that makes the next step pretty obvious, Renard. What's your address?
Here's my card. I'll expect you at 9.
Leave a candle in the window.
Uh-oh. Nailed down everything, Lieutenant. It's the Shamus.
Why, Sergeant Otis, don't tell me it's you. You've brightened my whole day.
I don't know why, but that's too bad.
Well, the boys in the pool room told me you were drafted. I cashed in all my war bonds. Now I can buy them back.
Otis, stop trying to figure that one out. What's doing, Rick?
Oh, nothing much, Walt. How'd you like to come along with me tonight? Help me wrap up a screwy blackmail deal. Might learn something. It's a new angle.
What's new about blackmail?
Well, the whodunit part in this case. My client doesn't know who's blackmailing him, but some character named Andy is supposed to pick up the cabbage tonight. Want to come along or not?
I'd like to, Mr. Diamond, if the invitation is still open.
Well, that's very nice, Lieutenant Levinson. It's open to you for a nominal fee.
Well, I'm prepared to pay. Oh, hey, cut it out, Rick.
Can I go too, Lieutenant?
Sorry, Otis. This is strictly Stag.
Oh, I didn't know. Excuse me.
One moment. Oh, come in, Mr. Diamond. Who is this other gentleman?
Roger Renard, meet Lieutenant Walt Levinson.
The police.
Diamond, I expressly told you...
Take it easy, Mr. Renard. I'm here unofficially.
What time is it, Walt?
Nearly 9.
Quiet. I just heard something.
Oh, relax, Walt, relax. Mr. Renard is suffering from a set of mechanized molars.
Oh. Store teeth, huh?
Yes, it has become unbearably embarrassing. Oh, would you gentlemen care for a drink while we're waiting?
I'll take a double of anything.
Oh, I don't think I'll have
it. Oh, go ahead, Walt. Get an unofficial snootful.
Wait. Oh.
Sit tight, Renard. I'll get it.
I'll cover you, Rick, just in case.
A package for Mr. Raynard.
Come right in, Andy.
What do you mean, Andy? My name's Sheldon. Are you Raynard?
I'm Renard.
Oh, sign here.
I'll sign it, Renard. It looks like straight goods. We're getting anxious.
All right, then. Here.
Here's your package. Keep this side up.
Okay, Sheldon. Sorry for the trouble. Here. Catch.
Hey, thanks. Thanks a million.
False alarm. Hey, that's a screwy-looking package. Look at those holes all over the top.
Can't imagine who would be sending me anything.
Why don't you open it as long as we're killing time?
Yes, of course. Well, heavy cardboard. There.
Rick, what? Look. It's alive. It's a pigeon.
Oh. All right, you. Talk.
What are you yelling at that bird for?
Well, I thought he might be a stool pigeon.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Gentlemen, look at this nameplate on the bird's leg here underneath the capsule.
Says Andy. That must be the bird's name.
Let me see that box it came in. Yep, there's a note. Listen to this. Mr. Renard, by now you have met Andy, my pigeon. You will please roll the $100 bill very tightly and place it in the capsule attached to Andy's leg. Then simply release him outdoors. Please check your watch, Mr. Renard. If Andy isn't safely home by 9:30, your secret will be turned over to the papers in the morning. You will hear from me again next week. No signature.
How do you like that? You get it, Rick? Andy's a homing pigeon.
Oh, don't explain it, Walt. Just pick out a nice, hard wall for me to knock my conceited head against.
Mr. Diamond, it's almost 9:15. What shall I do?
Well, here's my overpaid opinion, Renard. If you don't pay off, you know what'll happen. If you do pay off... We'll just keep working on the case and hope for the best.
Rick, do you think we could...
Oh, Walt, don't say it. The chances of following a pigeon between New York skyscrapers, especially at night, is strictly for radar, something we don't happen to have handy. Well, what's it going to be, Renard?
I'll pay the money, of course. There's no other way. But this will bleed me dry week in, week out.
Looks that way.
Well, that will be the end, then. I can't raise that much cash each week. Well, here's the money, Mr. Diamond. Will you gentlemen take care of the details?
There wasn't any use hanging around. Walt drove me home, and I spent the rest of the night dreaming about flying blackmailers. Sure, we could check the delivery outfit that brought the package, but I'd give odds that the turned address was phony. Come morning, I washed the sour taste out of my mouth with some coffee and went to my office. While I was draping some black crepe around my license, business picked up. A nervous young man walked in, introduced himself as John Miller, hemmed and hawed for a minute, and then blurted out with...
Mr. Diamond, I need your help right away. I'm being blackmailed.
Just because I sat there with my mouth open, he thought I was interested and told me more. He was married, and several years ago, another girl had come along. Nothing serious. The romance had died in a few weeks, but his wife might not understand, so on, so on.
Mr. Diamond, why are you staring at me that way?
Who is blackmailing you?
What's the strangest part? I don't know.
Oh, don't sit there and lie to me. You've got to know. Blackmail means that somebody has got... never mind.
Oh, there's one thing, though. Tonight at 9 o'clock, someone named Andy will be...
Andy? Oh, no. No, no, no!
Before we continue with the adventures of Richard Diamond, here's a lady with a question for our Rexall family druggist.
I want to know more about the ad on Rexall's one-cent sale.
Well, ma'am, the ad appears in this week's Life, Look, Collier's, the Saturday Evening Post, and the Farm Journal. Two big pages crammed with 150 guaranteed Rexall products. Every one of them offered to you during Rexall's famous one-cent sale at two for the price of one, plus a penny.
Golly, what an opportunity to save.
And that's not all. The ad also lists 53 other specials that can help you cut your cost of living to a minimum. Now, in front of every item, there's a little square so you can check what you need in advance.
Well, I can use the ad as a shopping list.
That's exactly what we intend it to be. It's your big chance to stock up for months in advance. Because on October 19th, the starting date of Rexall's one-cent sale, you double your buying power simply by adding a penny.
Where did you say the ad appears?
In this week's Collier's, Look, Life, Saturday Evening Post, and Farm Journal. Look for it. And remember, you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
And now back to tonight's adventure with Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell.
So it had come to me, as it must to all private detectives. A strange little voice inside my head began nagging.
Get out of this business while you still have all your marbles. Get into something sensible, like taming pythons.
It wasn't enough to have one client being blackmailed by someone he didn't know. A second guy has to walk in with the same routine. And the payoff was that a certain miserable homing pigeon called Andy had a feather in the pie. A foul, foul, that Andy. After a while, my second client, Miller, began to fidget in his seat. Probably because I began sharpening my letter opener.
Mr. Diamond, do you feel all right?
Oh, yes, I feel great, simply great. Just keep me away from open windows.
I beg your pardon?
No, forget it, forget it. Now, let's see now. You're being blackmailed, but you don't know by whom. And a certain Andy will be at your office by 9 o'clock tonight to pick up the money.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, well, now, Miller, I'll be kind. I won't tell you who Andy is right now. First of all, you tell me, do you know Roger Renard?
Roger Renard?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't believe so.
Now, think hard, Miller. Small guy, bright blue eyes, cultured voice.
No, I don't know anyone like that. Who is he?
Well, he happens to be in the same hole you are. Andy paid him a visit last night.
Really?
Yeah. This is bargain basement day and blackmail.
Well, what do you know? Well, let me think. Renard.
Now, look, I got a better idea. You just sit tight and leaf through my collection of unpaid bills. It'll keep your mind off your own worries. Well, there's got to be an answer to this.
Hello?
Renard, this is Diamond. Can you get to my office in 15 minutes?
Of course. Has anything happened?
Don't ask.
But,
Just hurry. There'll be a diagram for you when you get here. When Roger Renard arrived, I introduced him and revealed my last hope. Somewhere, there had to be a familiar connection between Miller and Renard. A familiar place, a mutual friend. Well, they finally caught on and began playing the game known as, haven't I met you somewhere before?
Now, let's see, Miller. Were you in Kansas in the winter of 1942? I had a dear lady friend there at the time, name of Sophie Holloway.
Never been in Kansas. I spent 2 years in Seattle, though, 1938-39.
No, never had the pleasure of being in Seattle. Pardon me. Bad job done on my new team. Now, about New York. Ever frequented...
And so it went on and on. If these guys had been stranded on a desert island 20 feet square, they probably never would have bumped into each other. But the fact remained. Somebody knew about the pass of both and was using the same technique to blackmail them. An hour and 3 aspirins later, my head began to feel like a ping-pong ball being smacked from Miller to Renard, from Renard to Miller, from Miller...
I've done my best to stay away from physical exertion, and I must say that I've been rather successful at it. The devil take these artificial bicuspids. I go to all the expense of having New York's best oral surgeon work on my mouth, and then some incompetent dentist can't turn out a proper fitting denture.
Well, we're not getting any place. I have an appointment in 2 minutes.
You learn anything new, Mr. Diamond? You'll be sure to call me, won't you? If something doesn't happen soon, I just don't know.
No, don't worry, Roger. We'll catch the culprit, or my name isn't, it doesn't make any difference anyway.
Well, goodbye, Mr. Diamond.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Renard. That guy was driving me crazy with that clack-clack of his teeth. You'd think an oral surgeon with Cutler's reputation would recommend a competent dentist to his patients. I thought he was great.
Yeah, sure. Now, look, Miller, isn't there anything else I can do for you? Find out who stole your yo-yo in 1922, or maybe get
you... Look, just find out who's blackmailing me, Diamond. I haven't slept in days.
I know. Somehow I feel that soon you won't be alone.
If you could only find out where that pigeon is.
Hello, pigeon.
Well, Rick, what are you doing here in the middle of the afternoon?
Oh, I'm looking for a place to hide, Helen, dear. Can I borrow your closet?
Hide from what?
Pigeons, false teeth.
A pigeon with false teeth?
No, dear. A client with false teeth. The pigeon's blackmailing him.
Oh, a stool pigeon.
No, I tried that. This pigeon flies.
He has a plane?
Honey, this is a real pigeon with wings yet. You know, like this.
Oh, just... Lie down on the couch and take it easy. You must be working too hard.
I don't want to lie down.
You want to fly.
No.
Well, make up your mind.
Well, I'm trying to tell you why I came over. Two guys who never saw each other are being blackmailed.
By a pigeon.
Yes.
The same pigeon.
Yes.
And it flies.
Yes, and it goes coo, 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 brr, coo, coo.
Are you sure you wouldn't like to lie down?
No, I just want some peace and quiet so I can figure this thing out.
Rick, darling, at least try and take it easy. Now, come on. Nothing's that bad. Smile for Helen.
Smile?
Oh, come on. Let's see your pearly teeth.
Hmm?
I said, let's see your pearly teeth.
Helen, that's it.
That's wonderful. Now, how about a nice cool drink?
No, listen. Renard said he went to New York's best oral surgeon. Later, Miller said an oral surgeon with Dr. Cutler's reputation should have recommended a competent dentist.
And he was probably right. Now, why don't you just try...
How did Miller know Renard was talking about Dr. Cutler?
Ouija board?
Because Miller must have been treated by Dr. Cutler, too, and knows he's the best oral surgeon in New York. Helen, I gotta make a phone call. I grabbed a phone book, looked up the office of Dr. Cutler, oral surgeon, then called Walt. 20 minutes later, I met the good lieutenant on the 10th floor of an office building on Madison Avenue. Walt assigned Otis to guard duty outside of Dr. Cutler's office. His orders were to trip any guy in a white smock that seemed in a hurry to take the day off. Walt and I agreed to underplay our police affiliations just in case we were wrong. Then we went in. We slowed up when a white mountain of a woman stood up from her desk and announced she was Miss Barrows, Dr. Cutler's nurse. Could have fooled me. From the size of her, Notre Dame could have used her last week.
What seems to be the trouble, gentlemen?
Well, it's somewhat important, Miss Barrow. We'd like to... see Dr. Cutler as soon as possible. My name's Diamond.
I see. In just a moment.
Yes, Miss Barrow?
Doctor, there's a Mr. Diamond and his friend here to see you. They say it's urgent.
Thank you. I'll be right out.
Won't you sit down?
No, thanks, Ruth. We'll stay in.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello, Doctor.
How do you do?
That seems to be the trouble.
May we go into your office, Doctor?
Oh, yes, of course. Go right in. Miss Barrow, are those x-rays ready on that impacted molar?
I'll have a look, Doctor.
Thank you. Now, gentlemen.
The doctor was an old, red-faced gentleman with puzzled blue eyes. As tactfully as I could, I told him about Renard and Miller and the fact that they were in trouble. Do you remember them?
Oh, yes, Mr. Diamond. I removed Mr. Renard's teeth last month. As for Mr. Miller... He was in just last week.
The rest of it is pretty blunt, Dr. Cutler. Both of these men are being blackmailed by the same party. And it just so happens, Doctor, that you are the only acquaintance they have in common.
What? Now, look here, young...
Don't get excited, Doc. Rick isn't accusing you. We just have to check these things.
I realize that. I think my position and past record in dental surgery are proof enough. If you care to see a statement of income from my practice... Plus stock dividends, you'll see how foolish...
Yeah, Doc, you're right. Rick, it just doesn't figure, not for a lousy couple of $100.
No, I know, Walt. It sure looks that way. But if this isn't the end of the line, we'll be on this sleigh ride forever. Dr. Cutler, is there Is there anyone else in your office who gets to know the patients well?
Just myself and Miss Barrow. She's the nurse who's outside. I could call her in.
No. In a minute, Doctor. Does she just answer the door and take temperatures or what?
Oh, no, of course not. Miss Barrow is a registered nurse and a trained anesthetist.
You mean she gives your patients Novocaine? Is that it, Doc?
Novocaine, yes, in some cases. For specific cases, we must use a more general anesthetic like sodium pentothal or gas, or sometimes...
Doctor, isn't sodium pentothal sometimes called the truth serum?
Yes, narcosynthesis. It's sometimes used in psychiatric treatment. Some patients will answer any question truthfully under the influence of sodium pentothal. See, it weakens the conscious will and...
The x-rays are ready, Doctor.
That's Miss Barrow now. I'll call her.
No. Don't do it, Doctor. Stall her. Just ask her to wait outside.
I don't understand, but... Anyway, one moment, Miss Barrow.
What are you going to do, Rick?
Doctor, I want you to pretend that I'm an emergency case. Must be treated at once. Can you?
Oh, of course, but...
Now, can you have your nurse give me something harmless instead of pentothal?
Yes. Distilled water could be substituted.
Well, we're in business. Walt, you make like the old friend who came along for laughs.
Uh-huh.
Now, Doctor, call Miss Barrow in and turn her loose on me.
Just relax in the chair, Mr. Diamond. There's nothing to worry about.
Oh, I hope not. My whole mouth feels like it's burning.
Now I'll have to strap your hand down for the pentothal injection.
This won't take long, will it?
You won't feel a thing. Now, there's the tourniquet. Now we're ready.
Well, let's get it over with.
Very soon, Mr. Diamond. Very soon. You're getting drowsy now. Very tired, aren't you? You can talk, Mr. Diamond. Patients often talk away their troubles while I take care of them.
Oh, yes, talk away troubles.
It's up to you, of course. But if you want to get anything off your conscience, why, just go ahead.
Oh, wonderful.
Everybody has something that's bothering them. Something they're ashamed of.
Ashamed? Oh.
You can tell me.
Ashamed of? Oh, ashamed.
Yes, go on.
I used to steal money from a friend of mine. He was a wonderful guy. Big, fat, but dumb from the word go. I'd steal him blind, his watch, his cash. He never knew what was happening.
That was terrible of you, wasn't it? What's his name?
Levinson. Walt Levinson. Oh, but then I...
Yes, I'm listening.
Well, then he became a policeman, a lieutenant. One night he caught me stealing. I had to kill him. He was going to arrest me.
And you escaped?
Yes, escaped. But his ghost haunts me. In fact, Lieutenant Walt Levinson is sitting in the next room, badge and all. Okay, Miss Barrow, we've all heard enough. Andy's going to miss you. Come on, Walt.
What? Why, you...
All right, lady, hold it.
Watch out, Walt. Walt ducked just in time to miss being scalded by the boiling pan of surgical instruments. But it gave her enough time to run out of the office. I had just freed myself when I heard a scream from the hall. Walt and I rushed out there and found Otis helping Miss Barrow to her feet.
Gee, miss, I'm sorry I tripped you, but you was wearing a white smock and I got mixed up. I'm sorry, honest I am.
Shut up, Otis.
What?
Otis, I don't know what to say. You doing this, Otis, you... Oh, Otis, you are without a doubt.
Feel better?
Mm-hmm.
All calmed down.
Oh, sure.
No more problems?
Not a single one.
Uh-huh. How's the pigeon?
Oh, we found him over at a nurse's house.
He was staying with the nurse?
In the garage, yes. Had a friend there, too. The nurse worked for Dr. Cutler, an oral surgeon.
Well, I thought you said your client was the one with the false teeth.
Well, that's right.
Then what was the matter with the pigeon?
Nothing. He was just a little tired from making all those trips with that money tied to his leg.
Oh?
Why don't you sing something?
All right. Wonderful, it's marvelous, you should care for me. Soft nights, paradise, what I love to see. You've made my life so glamorous. You can't blame me for feeling amorous. Oh, it's wonderful. It's marvelous that you should care for me. Well, honey, how was that?
Fine.
I don't even think you were listening.
Rick, about the pigeon and what you said about money tied to his leg and...
Come here.
Now, wait a minute. I'm confused.
Come here.
You said that you had a client who... He had false teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And a pigeon with money...
Still confused?
Confuse me some more.
Again, here's your Rexall family druggist. You listeners will have at least one of these magazines in your home this week. Life, Look, Collier's, the Saturday Evening Post, or the Farm Journal. Pick it up and turn the pages till you come to the two-page ad on Rexall's one-cent sale that starts October 19th. Take a long look at this opportunity to buy twice as much for just a penny more, because this ad lists 150 guaranteed Rexall products, all offered at two for the price of one plus a penny. In addition, there are 53 other sales specials you can't afford to miss. So check this ad on Rexall's Big 1 Cent Sale, and remember, starting October 19th and continuing through October 23rd, you can buy twice as much for just a penny more. Good health to all from Rexall. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, stars Dick Powell in the title role and was written by Joe Morheim and Hal Bloom and edited by Blake Edwards with music by Frank Worth. Dick Powell's soon-to-be-released picture is the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production, Right Cross, in which he co-stars with June Allison and Ricardo Montalban. Featured in tonight's cast were Ted Osborne, Wilms Herbert, Arthur Q. Bryan, Bob Sweeney, D.J. Thompson, and Virginia Gregg. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, is produced and directed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. This is Bill Foreman inviting you to join us next week at this same time when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Check the double-page ad in this week's Life, Look, Collier, Saturday Evening Post, and Farm Journal on Rexall's one-cent sale that starts October 19th. Mark the date on your calendar. It's your chance to buy two top-quality guaranteed Rexall products for the price of one plus a penny. Hear a thrilling police drama on Dragnet tomorrow night on NBC.
That does it for Case Closed this week. I hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can find more from Barry Craig, Richard Diamond, Case Closed, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. You'll find our Shoutcast stream there and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. It's how Relic Radio is made possible. My thanks to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.